702 for the curious.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
Oh yeah, and for those of you on Twitter, all that you have to do there is look for hashtag Karima Brown Show. I'll be tweeting in a couple of minutes. But let's go to the CEO at Outa, and that is Mr. Wayne Duvenage, who's of course, and that is the organization Undoing Tax Abuse. Wayne, good evening, and thank you for joining us.
No, nice to be with you this evening.
Great one. So, Wayne, I mean, you were already on the phone when I was laying out sort of the lay of the land when it comes to this issue of e-tolls. And to be quite frank, as a road user myself, I'm very confused because on the one end, I have the Gauteng ANC marching against the union buildings. Basically saying that, listen, this is an unaffordable process, or not process, but an unaffordable model. We're not happy with, on behalf of consumers. And at the national level, we have both a Minister of Transport as well as a Minister of Finance that basically tells us it's not going to go anywhere. And then let's mix in 15,000 summons that have been issued. I mean, where are we with this business?
Okay, so a couple of new developments recently, and that is the ANC Gauteng coming into play. But if we just cast our minds back, nothing has really changed from the word go. Mm. We had six ministers of transport over the last 7 years saying that e-tolls is here and to stay, and we've had a number of ministers of finance saying the same thing. And when they launched in 2013, for the first 6 months, they managed to get their compliance levels to 40%. They mm-hmm. said they would have 90% plus, and that's what you need to make a user-based scheme like this work. Mm. And then it started to subside after that. They tried to launch a 60% discount carrot in 2015. That didn't work, and mm-hmm. the non-compliance continued to grow. It's now down to, as I said, 25%. So 75% of people have defied the system for very, very valid reasons. Outa, since its inception, we interdicted its launch initially in 2012. Then the court said they can go ahead, but a collateral or defensive challenge can be raised when a member of the public is summoned. And that's where Outa continued to remain relevant, and now we are defending about 1,200 of those cases in this test case, which is being formulated at the moment. So all that's happened in the last while is, look, Nombula Mokonyane, who sided with government in the province, and the premier said no, she was for e-tolls. Obviously, it was politically correct for her to say so. But David Makuura came into power in 2014 on a very loss for the Gauteng government, provincial government, from a 63% 5 years prior to that to 54%. So they lost 9% of the votes. Mm. And he was against e-tolls then. But they didn't do much. Now, 5 years later, in 6 months' time, we have the next round of elections for the province. So they have decided to make this an election issue, and they are now fighting with national government. Fighting, I say, in inverted commas, as you say, ANC marching on. That's exactly what it is. That in itself tells you something. And we believe this is the political football now that's being played expediently as the elections come closer. And nonetheless, it is the people's campaign that has brought the system to its knees. It is no longer a viable user pay scheme, and it never was, and it never will be, because you can't go to war with the citizens of the government. 15,000 summonses they've issued so far. Only 3,500 roughly have reached the recipients, of which only 1,300 have given notice of intention to defend. 90% of them are artists as supporters, and we're managing their cases for them. And all of our supporters' cases become stayed, put on hold while the test case is.
Okay. Wayne, I'm going to ask you just to move around a bit because we keep on, losing you every now and again.
Okay.
So just to make sure that we obviously stay with this conversation. Okay. I hear what you're saying, and I have a couple of questions for you, and let's stick to the case, the legal issue here for those 1,200 some odd people that you are defending in this particular matter. I think the first and most important issue to canvas here is, what is the legal defense that you're raising in this particular instance? And unfortunately, sort of the legal background in me would be fascinated by this as a test case. And obviously, it's going to set some precedent either way. precedent, which is really good, alternatively, I mean, for government, or alternatively, really good for us as the end users. And I'm just trying to understand, what is the legal defense that you would raise for non-payment?
Okay. So, firstly, when government introduces policy of this nature, the law is very clear, the constitution is very clear. You have to consult meaningfully with the public.
Mm.
A meaningful consultation does not mean what Sanral did. And what Sanral did was place one advert in 2007 in six newspapers. They hid that advert in the business section in some of those newspapers, one of them in the international business section. It was extremely vague. You could not formulate an opinion of what they were doing. There were no rates, no tariffs. And they got, because of it was such a very poorly constructed notice to the public, they got 28 responses from 3.5 million motorists.
Wow.
And the law says you need to give a minimum of 30 days. So they took the minimum. They did everything they could to not alert the public of this new scheme. And that was in 2007. So you can imagine why in 2010, when the campies went up, the public, you and I, and at that time I was the chairman of Savrala, the Vehicle Renting and Leasing Association, and the CEO of Avis, the biggest fleet owners in the country. We knew nothing. Neither did the Road Freight Association, neither did anybody knew about the scheme. And as big fleet owners, you can imagine how this scheme was going to impact on industry. So they didn't meaningfully consult. That is a massive flaw. The second thing is they didn't conduct themselves from a board approval point of view in the way they should have. Thirdly, the minister never applied his mind. How do we know that? He received the files for this whole scheme and signed it within 24 hours. You cannot do that unless you either get other consultants, advisors to go through the scheme and advise you. You can't have Sanral advising you, it's their scheme, and then not apply your mind to it. That's the minister's role. Now, why are we saying these are very strong in our case? Because it was the exact same process that they followed for the Western Cape. And in the Western Cape e-tolls, they lost in the High Court, the Supreme Court, and the Constitutional Court on all those rulings. In fact, Sanral were found extremely wanting and almost perjured themselves in the way they presented how they had conducted themselves, and it was extremely meaningless. So when you lose your cases in the Western Cape and the same matters applied here, the only difference between Gauteng and the Western Cape is here the roads were built and the money had been borrowed, but that doesn't make it lawful. So as a member of the public, when you're in front of a court and you can prove that their conduct was unlawful, the judge cannot find you guilty, in which case you are not guilty for not paying, in which case there's the precedent. Now, that aside, let's see how that falls out in the court. The next, those are the constitutional matters that have to be heard first. Then the next element is if the constitutional matter even goes in Sanral's favor, they've now, you can defend yourself on the merits. So here are some of the merits. I want to see the photos of my car going under every gantry. They don't have those photos. The second thing is I didn't get my e-toll bills in the post. They stopped posting them. The postal service is absolutely useless. The information in e-notice is not correct. All of these things count against them. Then if you've raised a dispute, which many people have because your number plates are cloned or there's an error on their bill, Sanral doesn't respond to those disputes, that counts against them. So if you cannot manage and administer the system properly, how do you expect the people to participate? So they have got such a tsunami of stuff against them that we can't see how the scheme will ever survive a court process. Then even all of that aside, let's say the courts rule in their favor and the merits are in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
Their biggest challenge, which is the real challenge, is now what are you going to do if 75% of the public, which is over 2 million, let's say, we're still not paying.
Yeah.
What do? They cannot arrest. They cannot criminalize. They cannot, when governments are stuck in this pickle, Gershwin, they cannot go to war with this because they lose it every time. History will show you that you don't win these wars. So they can't even administer their own laws. And they can't enforce them. So they've got a big problem. That is why the scheme has failed and will not live much longer.
I hear you, and I mean, it's quite fascinating. And I mean, what is the outcome that you're looking for in this instance, apart from obviously a victory and the court agreeing with you, Wayne? Is this one of those cases that we can see sort of dragging out for the next 3 to 5 years, where obviously, if I'm not mistaken, this would be heard in the High Court in the first instance, and then perhaps, you know, it could still be appealed and a full bench of the High Court is to hear it, and then maybe the SEA is to hear it, and then finally the Constitutional Court. So we are looking at some time that can pass before we you know, see the final result. I mean, are you looking to set a precedent so that the 1,200 people that or litigants that you are taking to, you know, assisting with their court process, is the idea behind it really to say that, look, we'll use this as a test case, and then thereafter what we will do with this case is you know, it sets the precedent, and Gershwell doesn't have to worry then about the summons he might receive or whoever else.
So let's cast our minds back to this is a test case, because obviously the deputy judge president doesn't want 1,200 cases coming into court, so he's agreed this, and rather that's what the deputy judge president would have insisted on anyway, that we'll have cases. It's not one case, by the way. There are 4 cases in the High Court, and we also want to bring some lower court, the magistrates' court matters in. So it's not all businesses. It's also individuals, because there are various scenarios. For instance, you might not be connected to the internet. You might not get your post because you live in a township where postal services don't exist. And you've got to travel these roads to get to work. So the judge is going to listen to your argument, very different to a big trucking company's argument, who was paying and these guys weren't paying, and or they started paying and stopped paying. So the various scenarios would have to be tested in this test case. Now, this test case, by the way, we've been working, our lawyers with Sanral's lawyers, for nearly 2 years, and we haven't even got to the High Court. If they were serious, they would be moving a lot faster. Second thing is the number of people who received their summonses, and they haven't even responded, which opens the door to Sanral to get default judgments. If they were serious about chasing the money, they would have gone for default judgments. They haven't done that. So you've got to ask yourself, what is this game they're playing? The third thing is, as you say, I mean, this has been going for nearly 5 years. The scheme is barely covering the collection costs, barely covering. They're raising about 60 million rand a month. They needed to be raising nearly 300 million rand a month to make the scheme work and to pay off the bonds. So, you know, you wonder what is actually motivating them to continue down this road. And so this case will, as you say, drag on for another 2 years. We've been 2 years in the making, 4 years. The only people getting richer are the lawyers. But we will stand our ground and defend the public until this matter is finished. And if the precedent case wins for the public, well, then that is the end of ETALS, just as it was the case in other irrational laws in the apartheid South Africa, where the past laws or the Group Areas Act existed. They too, and the same senior counsel who handled those cases is on our case here, Gilbert Marcus, where they had to go to court. And after the 4th case being they lost, they won the 5th case on the past laws, and that was the precedent for everybody else. So we will fight this case after case until the precedent is set that this government has no choice but to scrap an irrational scheme. Now, that doesn't mean, Gershwell, that we are anti-paying taxes or that we are anti-paying for roads. We know that infrastructure has to be paid for. We know that we need to continue building roads. What we are asking government to consider is this. If your existing policies are varied and enough to do this in a better way to suit the interests of the country and its people, then use those options. And those options exist. You must know that there's big freeway upgrades happening in Durban, massive multi-billion rand interchanges, 4-lane highways lit up from Mabuni all the way to Mhlanga, not tolled. And they finance those through government grants, treasury, and fuel levies. Why don't they do the same here? I don't know if you saw our video, 34% of Sanral's revenue would have come from 1% of their road surface. So this is not a user-pay scheme anymore. This is the Gauteng users, road users, are being grossly abused by Sanral.
I hear what you're saying, and I mean it is obviously anyone that you know would think about this in one way or the other, you're affected by these e-tolls inevitably. And assuming that everyone does pay, you know, the bill would be so much higher for many issues that we have to deal with. But
yeah.
Wayne, getting back to the issue at hand here, I mean, surely as a civil society organization, you guys would have also sought a political solution. Right. And what I mean by a political solution is that surely you would have then approached the minister, you would have approached, you know, government in general and sat down with them and said, listen, this is a problem. These are the reasons why this is a problem. And can't we do away with this thing? I mean, is that still a possibility, especially within the current political climate where you do have a provincial government marching to the union buildings and saying that, listen, we're not standing for this thing, or is it something that we shouldn't be taking all that seriously?
Well, we did march last week with COSATU and other associations. We're apolitical. The fact that there was a political party there as well, neither here nor there for us. We marched on behalf of the public. We were there, quite ironically, by the way, handing over the memorandum to the very same Jeff Radebe, who is the Minister of Transport, who signed the e-toll bills into being and never applied his mind at the time. It was quite ironic. But going back to political solutions, we were invited, when we interdicted the launch in 2012 in April, the was tasked to set up an interministerial committee meeting to meet with the various role players.
Okay.
And ourselves, the AA, retail motor industries, a number of people met with the interministerial committee and Sandal and all the players, and they couldn't find a solution.
Yeah.
So they said they were going ahead, and we said, fine, we have done our research. We wrote to government, we gave them our position papers, our research showed it had all hallmarks of failure. They failed to listen to us. I mean, this Portugal scheme that had recently been launched had failed, and they got the 80% compliance, by the way, and tracing 20% was just too costly. And what happens, these schemes start spiraling downwards when you don't have all users paying. So if you write position papers, if you position yourself at the interministerial committee meetings, and you write, we wrote to it was Spoon de Bele at the time. We wrote to, very briefly, it was Ben Martins, Bill Peters, Joe Masinganye, and now recently Bladen Zamanda. We have written to every one of those ministers. We have written to the ministers of finance, but they don't want to engage with civil society because it's a case of having to eat the humble pie. When civil society teaches politicians the lessons of failed government policy, it's quite embarrassing for government. So they've chosen to ignore civil society, but I think they're now in a corner where they cannot ignore it anymore. But what are they going to do? They're going to turn to the political party that's heading up the province and saying, now we're going to listen to the ANC and Gauteng. And that's going to be the political ploy for the election next year, instead of saying, we should have listened to civil society 5 years ago.
I mean, that's an interesting, way to look at it. But I'm just thinking that in light of 15,000, and I mean, that's not really little. I mean, the mere process of getting to the point whereby you actually issue summons, because I think any person with any remote legal understanding would know that generally speaking, before you even get to the point of issuing summons, which in itself is an expensive exercise, if you have to think about each summons that has been issued, you have to send letters of demand, you have to send final notice of intention to proceed before you get to the point whereby you can issue summons. And as you said, some of them are being defended, so which means that a court date should be set down. And for those that aren't defending or not even responding, and I'm sure there's a lot of those people that won't be doing that, imagine default judgment is passed.
Yes.
And for you then, either just short of the elections or just after the election, or maybe, most likely, and it's more practical and makes sense, just before the elections to say that, oh, by the way, let's scrap e-tolls because we're listening to ANC at Gauteng level, would be a very expensive and fruitless exercise. And just to take into account also, on top of that, that right now you have a Minister of Finance as well as a Minister of Transport basically saying, guys, this thing is here to stay and deal with it whether you like it or not. I mean, this is still very much a big fat mess.
Well, okay, so there's two elements there. You've got 15,000 people being summoned, but only 3,000 that reach 3,000. There's your first problem. You've got a massive failure rate of summonses getting to people. Why is that? Because this scheme relied on e-natus. E-natus is inaccurate. It relies on postal services. It relies on final demands and the sheriffs of the court. And so you can see there's a failure there. And the next thing is, while 15,000 summonses might seem a lot, it's very little in the scheme of things. There are 3 million vehicles in debt to SANRAL. Now, yes, sure, not a number of those are in small debts, but a number of them in the millions. So,
but that's what I was thinking as well. Isn't that part of the problem, is that you have these really small debts here and there? I mean, a couple of thousand here, a couple of thousand there. And I know for me as a consumer, it seems like a lot. But, I mean, for someone suing me for that amount of money, it's actually a lot of money.
Yeah, and I mean, the legal process is just to sue somebody with a 3,000 Rand debt is just not worth it. Because by the time you've got them to court, you spent that money just chasing them up. So
it's
so unviable. I mean, where have you heard in the world today a government issuing 15,000 summonses on its citizens? A government. This is unheard of. it's just madness. And then the last thing is, yes, the minister says he told us here to stay, but we have to keep reminding the ministers. Well, that's just semantics, because you might think he told us here, but in actual fact, people are driving under gantries and not paying you, so it's not here. It's here in the lights, it's here in the clickers that are going off in the SANRAL rooms and the computers saying, hey, we're making all the so-called money. But what SANRAL have to do every financial year, and you look at their financial books, they have written off 14 billion rand. In the last 4 years of the 23. So 60% of what they've billed, they've had to write off. They've had no choice, because the accounting officers and the principals in accounting says if you cannot collect the money, you cannot show it as an asset in your debtors outstanding.
I hear you, Wayne. We'll have to leave it there, unfortunately. I mean, you and I could probably chat all the way through to 10 o'clock, but if I do that, then Clive is going to throw something at me. And I really don't want to be hit in the head again. All the best to you.
All the best. Cheers, mate.
Bye. Cheers, mate. Thanks. That was Wayne Duvenage from, he is the CEO at the organization Undoing Tax Abuse.